We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to In the Know. We are joined by Steph No. He is a former Bulls writer for The Athletic, and currently you may have seen some of his basketball quizzes that he's put on Twitter and to test your knowledge of defense and various X's and O's. What's up, Steph? How you doing? I understand you're in and have been in New Orleans. What's up, my man?
Doing great. I'm very flattered that you guys named this podcast after me. It's very kind of you. Glad to be here.
Of course. Yeah, man. So, you know, we got Steph on to talk about Bulls, and I think the Bulls are one of the more interesting teams out there this season. One, they hired new management, which is really surprising. They hired a new coach along with that management, which is also, I think, something Steph was excited about. If you followed him on Twitter, you could have some fun times reading about Boylan and the past year. And then they have a pretty big decision coming up with the draft. So I guess we can kind of, what we'd like to do is we start off slow. And so how did you become a Bulls fan, and what was your journey towards covering them and into where you are now?
Well, I didn't really have a choice. I'm 36. So, you know, I was in middle school during the second three-peat of the Jordan Bulls. And if you grew up in Chicago, I grew up in a suburb of Chicago, you were kind of just forced into it. So I was stuck with these Reinsdorf teams growing up, and I kind of never really grew out of it. Started writing about the Bulls just in my spare time over at SB Nation at Bloggable. And then I parlayed that. Actually, I was the first guy over at The Athletic doing basketball stuff. So their first city that they were in was Chicago. So I kind of built up their Bulls coverage there, did that for 4 years. And yeah, now with COVID going on, they laid off all of their part-timers. So I'm, I guess, looking for the next thing. I have this Bulls newsletter going on right now that's free to sign up. If people want to, people listen to this and enjoy my Bulls takes, you can always find that at my Substack page. And yeah, I guess that's my full Bulls story.
It's ironic almost, since I'm up in Chicago doing Pelican stuff, and you're down in New Orleans doing Bulls stuff. Is there how's New Orleans been treating you? I think that's something that most of our listeners can relate to. So you've been down there for a while, liking it. What's any favorite parts of the city or things to do?
Yeah, Mason, we gotta come up with some swap here, where every time I go home for the holidays, I bring you some crawfish, and every time you come home, you bring me some pizza or something. But the first time I was in New Orleans was in 2011. It was a couple of years after Katrina. I actually came down here to volunteer through an AmeriCorps project. And I kind of, the city is so interesting. It's just so unlike any other American city, I'm sure. Mason, like you living in Chicago, it's just, they're two totally different cities. So definitely a lot of cool stuff. I've enjoyed living here it's been 4 years this stint, and I had another 2 years on and off. So kind of keeps on pulling me in.
Yeah, that's just how New Orleans is. It sucks you in, and next thing you know, you've been here for many, many years, and you're wondering where all the time went. And it's basically in its own little time, space, dimension. It's the way I like to consider it. But pretty cool that, you know, you've been down here a little bit, and we'll definitely work on Mason getting you some pizza, but he's got to bring me some first, which he has yet to do. We'll work on that.
We don't have ramen pizza here yet, Schmidt.
Yeah, well, I thought Chicago was supposed to be a hub of food innovation. Clearly, they don't respect my artistry. In any case, Steph, you guys had major changes. Walk us through what you make of the hiring of Carson Ovas and the hiring of Billy Donovan, and kind of the drastic direction change the Bulls made when, you know, they had the whole Garpax thing for the longest time, and no one really expected this to come to fruition, especially with Jim Boylan.
So I don't know if you guys are familiar with this this fable, The Monkey's Paw. But it's about this person who gets this monkey's paw and gets a bunch of wishes, but the wishes turn out incredibly awful. So like, my dream growing up was always to write about basketball. Made it happen, but then right when I started, it was like during this season where the Bulls were doing this horrendous tank, where they actually got reprimanded by the league for sitting out all their veterans, and they just missed out on Luka Doncic in that draft. They got Wendell Carter, which was great. But I mean, it's been like pretty much a gigantic disaster for the past 4 years. It's been, in my opinion, largely driven by management, Gar and Pax. And I was, my goal when I started writing about the Bulls was to kind of show like how bad these guys were and how they were holding this franchise back that had so many things going for it, and just like terrible decision-making. So yes, I was absolutely thrilled when Bulls finally moved on from these guys. And, you know, anybody who's even paying cursory attention to the NBA has seen how crazy things were with Jim Boylan over the past year and a half as well. So, I think that the Bulls have some interesting young players. They have definitely underperformed the past couple of years, but so much of that, I think, is just due to this insane situation that they had around coaching staff, management, just not putting players in a position to succeed. So yes, I am extremely excited. I think that Billy Donovan, just, I don't think that he's necessarily like a top five coach or anything, but just having a level of competency and professionalism there is going to be so advantageous for these young players who've not really had that yet. And then, yeah, Carter Soves, you know, we really don't know that much about him. I mean, his resume is stellar, but so far, I mean, he's made all the right moves, and it's hard for me to envision possibly not moving up significantly from what the Bulls had before. So it's definitely a very exciting time to be a Bulls fan.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like you picked up some fans along the way with your writing, including our favorite scout man, who was a big fan of your work, it seems.
Yeah.
But you're right, the Bulls are trending in a very positive direction, and I agree that having a coach like Billy Donovan, where you know what you're getting out of him, it brings this baseline competency, is super important when you have a team as young as the Bulls, because it kind of gives you this opportunity to see what you have. Whereas you might be always second guessing yourself when you have coaching that is inadequate, right? You know, you don't know what you have with Lauri Markkanen, you don't know what you have with Wendell Carter Jr. And then you bring the stabilizing force. You know, these guys are going to be up for extension and big money soon. And you have to kind of figure out where you stand with these players and what, if they're going to be a part of your future. And so I think with that regard, it was a home run hire to bring in Billy Donovan. That's a very good coach to bring in. There's a pretty big decision coming up very soon, within less than 2 weeks. And that is the number four pick. And just want to get an idea of where you think the Bulls are. There's been a lot of smoke up and down, right? So it's like, okay, well, maybe, you know, they want to move up and get LaMelo, or they're fine where they are, or, you know, maybe we're going to lean on a more European connection based off of Karsanova's, his draft history, or his, at least the history that was in Denver. You know, they drafted a lot of foreign players. Maybe, you know, it's Denny Avdija that they're going for. So where do you think the Bulls are with that? And are they looking for a specific need, a specific talent? What are your thoughts?
I think it's really instructive how these last couple of months have gone, the first months of Karsanovas' tenure, in that there was a lot of speculation in Chicago that Jim Boylan was going to coach next season. And then all of a sudden, it caught everyone off guard when Karsanovas fired him. There was a lot of speculation that Karsanovas was going to really take his time hiring a general manager. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, they hired Mark Eversley from the Sixers. And then nobody thought that they were going over Billy Donovan. And then they got him. So the reason why I bring this stuff up is, yeah, there's been a lot of talk about what the Bulls are going to do in the draft. I've seen reports that they're going to move up for LaMelo. I've seen reports that they're going to trade back. John Hollinger today predicted that they're going to take Halliburton. You know, Avdija has been speculated to them too a lot because of that European connection, as you talked about. But the truth of the matter is that nobody knows what the Bulls are going to do. Karsanovas has been extremely tight-lipped. There have been no leaks coming out of the Bulls organization. And basically what has happened is, he tells Woj, he has a relationship with Woj, so he tells Woj right before he's about to do something. Woj tweets it out, and then everybody, all the Chicago media, scrambles to figure out what's going on. So, you know, I really have no idea what they're going to do. I think that, you know, obviously the top three in most mocks is, you know, some combination of Ball, Edwards, and Wiseman. So, you know, I think that if, I certainly have guys that I like, but I don't really know who, apart from, you know, those top three, the Bulls would take.
So you built a quiz, though, that allows you to figure out what your potential draft profile may be. And what did your draft profile say that you'd be looking for it for?
Yeah, the quiz I made was really interesting. The reason why I built that was to show how strong your internal biases are in determining what kind of players you like. And it was really surprising to me. A lot of people who took that quiz said that it basically nailed their draft order, which I don't really think is necessarily a good thing. You know, these biases, you need to be really cognizant of, because it clouds your judgment of how talented a player actually is. So for instance, for me, like, I know that I have a strong bias against big men. I just don't think that, you know, you should waste a high pick on them. And I really like these, kind of jack of all trades guys. I don't like big scorers. Like, I'm not a huge LaVine fan, even though I can respect the good things that he does for the Bulls. So You know, I probably very much overrate a guy like Devin Vassell. I like Killian Hayes a lot. And, you know, again, like this is just, I think it's a lot of just our individual draft takes are a reflection of just these archetypes that we tend to fall in love with.
So there was a report recently that came out with regards to Wendell Carter Jr. And I think it was on the Low Post, and they had the draft guys, Mike Schmitz and Jonathan Givony. And they said the intel is that the Bulls are higher on Lauri Markkanen, and he's considered a somewhat more untouchable than Wendell Carter Jr., which is, I think, surprising to a lot of Twitter folks who are high on Wendell Carter Jr. For good reason. You know, he's been a good player when healthy. His advanced metrics are pretty solid. He's a really good defender. What do you make of that report that came out? Do you feel like there's validity to it? And, you know, you guys are in an interesting situation here. Do you see a potential for him to get moved, or either of those players to get moved?
Yeah, I mean, I know that Zach is really well connected in the league, but I do not really take too much stock into I didn't listen to the podcast, so I don't know if it was Zach saying that or Givony, but one of my friends, Kevin Farragan, who's also a huge Bulls guy, he suggested this theory, which kind of makes sense to me, that the Bulls were floating Markkanen as having higher value than Carter because, you know, if they're going to leverage their position to make a trade in the draft, they have to act like they are not as high on Carter because it, you know, they want to create the threat of taking a guy like Wiseman or Okongwu. And if they say that, you know, Carter is their guy, then that kind of lowers those other two prospects on their board in the eyes of other teams. So, I mean, I don't know if that's true or not, like, but it kind of makes sense to me. And again, like this front office has been so airtight. I just don't really, I've seen a lot of speculation out there since Karnisovas took over. None of it has been accurate. So I'm just going by that prior and assuming that until proven elsewise, nobody really knows what they're talking about.
Do you have a preferred, and I know this question can be difficult because, you know, I always hate the, oh, would you rather trade up or trade down questions? Cause it's all relative, right? Depends on what's coming back. But,
right.
Is there a path in your mind that makes you strongly think that trading out of the number four pick is the right move? Or do you have someone at four that you feel like should be there and you'd be ecstatic if the Bulls took him?
Well, yeah, I mean, speaking to your point, I actually wrote something about this on my Substack where I just think that this is going to be such an interesting market. I think there's going to be so much discussion from all the teams going in both directions. So I really don't think that you should pin yourself to one direction. If you want to maximize the value of this draft, I think you will definitely be able to do it if you're willing to be flexible. But I mean, to give you a more concrete answer, I think that one trade partner that makes a ton of sense for the Bulls is the Celtics. They have three first round picks, and there's already been some reporting that they're trying to package those to move up in the draft. They can't really fit three rookies on their roster, obviously, like if they're, you know, they're going to be contending pretty strongly for a title next year. So I think their picks are, I want to say like
14, 26 and 30.
Yeah. So there are these very various models out there. Dick Restifo's built one. Kevin Pelton's built one. I think Jacob Goldstein has another one. And I plugged those values in, and it comes out as like a small win for the Bulls in terms of expected value. Obviously, like all drafts are different, but I think that would make a lot of sense for the Bulls just because of the composition of this draft. You hear that there's going to be value in the middle and back end of the first round. There's just going to be, this is like a role player draft, right? Like the talent at the top is not really that great. But the talent in the middle and the back end seems to be like actually pretty solid. So the Bulls are in such a talent deficit too. Like they can definitely fit three first round picks on this roster and find playing time for them. So I think that that would make a lot of sense if they are offered that position. You know, you don't know if the Celtics have gone down as far as four in offering those picks, but that deal is on the table. I think it makes sense. Also, you know, obviously the one and two pick are being pretty heavily shopped here. So if the price gets low enough where, You know, the Bulls have some win now veterans like Thad Young, Tomas Satoransky, that they're not really going to do anything with those guys, because by the time they're competing, those guys aren't going to be on the roster anymore. So if those guys and maybe like a second round pick or something like that can help you move up, if that's like the price gets that low, then I think it makes a lot of sense. The Bulls could definitely use a guy like LaMelo Ball, because they just are so desperate for playmaking and passing on their team. So I think either of those directions makes sense if those positions are available to them.
So zooming out a little bit, what is the direction that the Bulls are going to have over the short term? And I guess the long term, because you know, you're kind of in the middle of, well, you got some young players, you have a high pick, maybe you know, you flip it for more young players. But you said you do have some win now veterans. So what is the immediate goal here? Is it still asset acquisition? Is it make the playoffs? Is there just kind of go with the flow? I mean, do you feel like you have a central core that's ready to compete? Or I would assume you still want that one star level player, whoever that may be, that you can be like, okay, this is our guy, let's build around him. What are you building around right now?
Right. I mean, there's been a lot of pain these last couple of years. The Bulls have been so bad, and the payoff for that has not really been there. Like, I don't think that they have. I mean, you'd have to be kind of crazy to think that they have a franchise star on the roster right now. So I think that it's interesting because historically the Bulls have really suffered from this cognitive bias called the endowment effect. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but it's a tendency to overvalue what you already have. So when John Paxson and Gar Foreman were general managers, they would just never trade their young players because they were so concerned that they would sell low on these guys. They just wait until it was very obvious that they were not NBA players, and then finally they would move on. So I think the Bulls have a huge advantage here in getting fresh eyes, guys that are not committed to anyone on the roster. And I think we are going to see a lot of turnover because if you're being honest with yourself and you look at this Bulls team, this ain't it. Like they're not going to build towards anything substantial. So they need to make major changes. I think they have good pieces to change course really quickly and build back up. But if they just continue with the guys they have and hope for internal development, I don't see them, you know, making it past the second round at the peak of this rebuild.
2020 has reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world, with more total visits than any other job site, according to Comscore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly, so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes and Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. The wait is finally over. Football's back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win the season. From games, spreads, and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on the season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
So now that we kind of know where they lie, there are some interesting decisions coming up this offseason. So one of them, and this is a player I'm a pretty big fan of, is Chris Dunn. You know, he's a potential restricted free agent. Do you feel like he has a future in Chicago? There, you know, Zach LaVine's already there. Coby White is already there. he can presumably play with both of those guys, so that's maybe not an issue. But as you mentioned, they might take Halliburton at four, and maybe, you know, Killian Hayes is there at four. Maybe LaMelo Ball is there. And so what is the future regarding Chris Dunn?
Yeah, I could see Chris Dunn signing his qualifying offer. It's, I don't have the number off the top of my head. It's pretty reasonable. I think it's like $7 or $8 million or something. Dunn is a really interesting player. Like, he can't shoot at all. His three-point misses are just horrendous. I mean, like, he probably led the Bulls in air balls on three-pointers, but his defense is very impactful. I think that a lot of people who, like, so nobody watched the Bulls last year. They're just really bad. But the people who actually did watch the games, they were the ones that put Chris Dunn on all NBA defensive team ballots. So I don't know how much of that too was based on the Bulls scheme. They ran this really gimmicky scheme. The Pelicans actually did a similar thing in the beginning of the year, but they realized that, you know, just doing insane amounts of blitzing was not going to work, and they scaled it back. The Bulls just ramped it up as the year continued. So I think those kind of inflated his steal numbers and his defensive impact numbers, to be honest, but he definitely was a really, really good defender. The Bulls also have Shaq Harrison on their roster, who's also going to be a restricted free agent. And I think that, you know, Harrison is a guy that's bounced around the league. He's probably going to sign like for close to the minimum, and he's giving you 75% of what Chris Dunn is. Maybe John Hollinger over at The Athletic, he had a column recently about like the best value free agents. And he said he really liked Dunn. He said that Dunn is going to help a team out, but he said that Shaq Harrison might be one of the best value signings in the league next year. Cause he's very similar to Dunn, and he's going to be really cheap. So if I were the Bulls, I would just prioritize signing Shaq Harrison and letting Dunn walk. I think Dunn can help a team that's further on in competing, but he's the kind of guy that you get, you know, when you need that defensive stopper on a championship team, not when you're rebuilding and desperate for offense. You've been, you know, 29th or 30th in the league in offense the last couple of years.
Do you think the Bulls balk at like a 2 years, $16 million deal? Would they match that?
Well, they have a ton of cap space in 2021. They're not going to be able to use it all. So cutting into that cap space, I don't think is a huge issue, but yeah, I just don't really see what he does for you that much, to be totally honest. Like, I think he's a good player, but he's not a great fit for what the Bulls are doing right now.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. And, you know, that's one of my favorite players. Now, to kind of flip it toward the Pelican side, I think there's a lot of potential trade possibilities between the two players. There's a lot of, between these two teams, there's a lot of players I like on the Bulls. Potentially there's some players on the Pelicans that the Bulls would like. Assuming Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram are off the table, do you take a look down the Pelicans roster and or, you know, treasure chest of picks? Do you see anything in particular that stands out that you feel like the Bulls will be interested in? And yeah, where's your head at regarding that?
Yeah, I was talking a little bit about this with Mason. I think that's why he invited me on your podcast, is because you guys are so desperate to offload Lonzo. I think a player like Lonzo needs such a specific fit in order to succeed. And I think the Bulls are that. Like, the Bulls have nobody that can dribble or pass the ball. Like, they just let Zach LaVine run their offense for most of the year last year. And LaVine has a lot of things going for him. He's explosive scorer. He's terrific at making crazy threes, but his court vision is really atrocious. I mean, they were, Jim Boylan said that he wanted the team to lead the league in assists. He wanted them to average 35 assists per game, which would have broken an NBA record. And I think they ended up like 26 or something. So yeah, their passing desperately needs to improve. And it's also hurting their evaluation of these young players, because a guy like Lauri Markkanen, he needs a lot of his baskets assisted, and he did not get the ball in very good places on the court. So I think a guy like Lonzo, just give him the keys to the offense. I know that he's extremely limited, you know, can't get to the rim. Free throw shooting is atrocious. I think people are sleeping on his, I would actually like to ask you guys about this. Like, I think people are sleeping on his 3-point shooting a lot. I mean, he shot like 38% last year, right? On a pretty high amount of attempts. So at least he has that going for him, right?
Yeah. So I think he's underrated as a spot up shooter. I think he's going to give you high volume, and he's going to have games where he knocks down a good amount of threes. He's not a liability out there anymore. At least that's the hope, right? I do think that
it's one of those situations where if you're in the playoffs, he's not getting, he's not going to hit 38%, and he's not going to get those 6 or 7 attempts a game that he has, mostly because it's teams are going to be a step closer to him. They're going to close out a little bit harder on him, and they know that he's not driving. He's not putting the ball on the floor. If he is, you know, he's taking 2 steps and passing it away. And there's a great chance for you to generate a turnover off that opportunity. So I think I still am hesitant to say it's a playoff viable shot, but it's definitely a regular season viable shot. And that's important. That's important for teams. And I think the better kind of engine you have of an offense, you know, like if you're on a team with Giannis, you're going to get those shots, right? And so the more attention you can have someone else generate, the better Lonzo is going to be, both in terms of getting open looks, but that's also where he functions the best as a playmaker, is using someone else's leverage to tilt the defense and then finding that pinpoint pass that where that open man is that the defense can't react to. Lonzo's really, really good in that situation. And so if the Bulls are interested in that and the restricted free agency that's soon to come, what do you think would be a fair trade?
Well, I think Lonzo's value is dropped pretty far. I mean, he was the number 5 pick, right? A couple of years ago, but
he was the 2nd overall.
Okay. I mean, like, clearly his value is not commensurate with a typical number 2 pick, but I don't know. I mean, the Bulls have a couple guys that they're like trying to give up on too. I guess I would be more interested in hearing what you guys think would be a fair offer from the Bulls, but I think they need like a somebody, just a short-term rental. I don't think Lonzo's going to be the guy, like, if the Bulls ever do get to be a serious contender that's going to be starting at point guard necessarily, but they just need someone who's competent, who can hold the fort down for the next couple of years at least.
Yeah. I don't know. Would you do one of Carter Jr. or Markkanen straight up?
Definitely not Carter. Markkanen would be kind of a tough sell too, but I think that he's an extremely divisive player in Chicago. A lot of people have just totally given up on him. He had a horrendous year last year, but again, like, we don't know, because the point guard play has been so bad, because the coaching has been so weak, what exactly Markkanen is. And I think it would be kind of a mistake to sell so low on the guy. His value could not possibly get any lower. And it could go up a lot. I mean, like, he was pretty good under Hoiberg, so I wouldn't do it. I think you could probably convince some of the Chicago fan base to get behind it.
Okay.
That's exactly that. And I've had other conversations about that exact trade earlier in the off season, was just the Lonzo for Markkanen and straight up swap. And so it's got, I feel like it has his legs. It's just, you know, it kind of that based on where the team, both teams are coming from and you know, thinking about what's coming down the road. You know, one man's trash is another man's maybe just better, a little bit better than trash. And so that was the first place my head went to. I'm not really sure, you know, what else I think would be fair value for Lonzo. I mean, you could talk about like packaging Lonzo with the pick to try to move up, but he's not getting you to 4. So right. I don't think that really jumps off the page.
So I guess complete this trade, Steph. Lonzo, Darius Miller is expiring for salary, and for Zach LaVine, what is needed to complete that trade?
Oh man, I don't have the Pelicans roster in front of me, but I mean, you'd have to include a substantial amount of value. Like, I'm not a guy who's super high on LaVine, but yeah, like I think there's a pretty big gap in talent there between him and Lonzo. So
like, including the 13th overall pick, you would need more?
I don't know. That would be interesting. I would have to think about it. I'm leaning towards thinking that's, I mean, this draft is kind of weak, so it's hard to say. I think like the Pelicans are an interesting spot, right? Because you know, the moves that they've made, hiring Stan Van Gundy, it's not really clear what direction they're going to go in. What do you guys think? Like, do you think they're going to try to make more of win now type moves? Because in that case, like, the Bulls do have some veterans, as I mentioned earlier, that they could give, or do you think that they're still going to buy their time and be patient under Griff?
I think they're going to try to have their cake and eat it too. So, like, you know, like, I think it's very likely they move off Drew. And so if you're moving off Drew, you're not really a win now team. But the return they're going to get on Drew is probably going to be a combination of players that can contribute now and then, you know, some sort of assets that they can utilize in the future. So I definitely do think that they want to be good and they want to not suck. Like, it's not going to be like we are fine just completely taking away the season for a good pick. I think that they do want to compete for the playoffs short and long term, but it's not, I think they're not going to do it at the expense of their future per se.
Okay. Do you think they would, what about, this doesn't quite work salary wise because Satoransky makes around 10 million. I think Lonzo makes like 7 or something, but
no, I think Lonzo's around 10 now.
Okay.
For the coming season.
Do you think that some sort of swap between those two and the Bulls could throw in some assets? Maybe, you know, this double draft is coming up. So a second round pick in that double draft is equivalent to like a first round grade in a normal draft. Do you think that might get it done?
The Lonzo stands would revolt and I would be so here for it.
Satoransky is a pretty good player. So
I know. I like him. I mean, I think he does more of what the Pelicans might need, but it's you know, it's also so hard to say because if Drew Holiday's traded, you know, what do you need, right? Right. It's a moving target, but I mean, I definitely like Satoransky's game.
For me, yeah. I think that'd be a little bit too close to be a lateral move in the sense that I think the Pelicans would rather ride it out with Lonzo, who does make Ingram happy, who does make Zion happy, and kind of just stick with that and kick the can down the road to either the trade deadline or restricted free agency to, you know, to see what they have in them. I think there is, while I think Satoransky would be a better fit immediately, I probably see the Pelicans taking the upside play on Lonzo, figure out maybe he can be something that's sustainably good.
Yeah. All right. Well, we can workshop some stuff and tag David Griffin in there. I know he's very active on Twitter. So.
Oh yeah. He reads everything. Everything. Yeah, he's very, very active on Twitter. But yeah, I mean, I guess enough time spent on Lonzo. Do you, like, from an outsider's point of view, do you feel like the Pelicans should be making a push to make the playoffs soon? Where do you think what is your idea of what the Pelicans should do for the next 1 or 2 years? How would you build that roster?
Well, I mean, I've been down here for a while, and I think it was really clear that the Pelicans were not being run very well before David Griffin got there, right? Like, Dell Demps, I don't know how you guys feel about him. I did not think he was doing a particularly good job, and obviously, I mean, I don't need to rehash this stuff with you guys. Like, this is a Pelicans podcast, right? So you guys know. So I think that the reason why I'm so excited about Karnišovas is I see firsthand how drastically things have changed once you get competent people in management. I think Griffin has done such a good job. So whatever he decides to do, I would have full trust that, you know, that is the right direction. It seems, again, like hiring Stan Van Gundy, it seems like they're going to try to push this thing forward quickly, which, you know, I can understand the argument for taking it slow, but also you need to be aggressive with your windows. Like, they don't come around very often. So if he thinks that that is the right way to go, then yeah, I definitely think he's a lot smarter than I am. So I would just, you know, I used to listen to him too. He had like you can listen to all of his thoughts when he had this like serious radio show for a long time. So that's great insight right there. And he's a really, really sharp guy. So yep, I would just trust in Griffin.
Yeah. Makes, I think it makes sense. And you know, I feel like with Stan, I think it's as much about riding the ship from a buy-in perspective. I think one of the biggest knocks on Gentry was he's more of a player's coach, and it's kind of loose in turn. And the Pelicans conversely have a lot of young guys who need to learn how to play in the NBA. And so, you know, I think from that respect, hiring Stan is not necessarily a win now type move. It's trying to get the team to play the right way. And I feel like, you know, while they're not playing to tank, at the same time, I think they can make some moves to think more long term, but also do everything they can when you've got Zion Williamson to make the push. And so, but obviously the thing that really underlies all of this is Western Conference, right? And so that's not making the playoffs and alone is not easy. And so I think, like you said, Griff is not oblivious to that fact, and there's no reason to do anything rash now that will jeopardize the long-term outlook on this team.
I want to ask you guys, I watched maybe a quarter of the Pelicans games. You guys definitely watched way more and more closely than I did. But from what I saw, the thing that disappointed me the most about their season last year was just Zion's defense. I thought he was, coming into the league as this impact defender that had a lot of, a lot of high impact plays on that end. And I didn't really see it. I mean, I thought he was like sleeping a lot on defense. And that's kind of why I also really like the Stan Van Gundy move, because obviously, Van Gundy is a great teacher of defense. So
he slept on the bench too.
Yeah, I used to, I saw Zion around town quite a bit. I'll just leave it at that. I don't know how much rest he was getting, man.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, I think everyone probably saw that defensive performance of his last season as a disappointment. I think coming off of injury and jumping right into an NBA season is about as difficult as it gets, especially for a rookie. So I do give him a built-in excuse for that, but there is a significant improvement that needs to be made on his end, I believe, conditioning-wise and just his body, that will hopefully translate on the defensive end. I think that's where I want to start before I worry about the other stuff. I mean, he's a smart guy. I believe he's going to figure it out schematically. It's just, I need your body to be right, and I need to be able to trust it so you can put forth effort at that end, and we don't have a massive defensive liability. You're not Julius Randle with hops, as everyone said you are,
Well, just that one scout guy, but yeah.
that one scout guy.
Yeah, that turned out to be not so accurate.
Right. No, I mean, I think he's still an otherworldly talent on offense, despite he was just out of shape, and he put up a ridiculous amount of points in a very limited time that he had on the court, and he applied a tremendous amount of pressure on the rim. So, I think that's only going to get better, but there really needs to be a concentrated focus. And I think hopefully Stan gets through to him and through to people around him that can make it happen, that make Zion good on defense. I mean, let's start with just being passable first. Let's start with being in good shape and being passable on defense, and then let's progress from there. But I think that's what every Pelicans fan is waiting for, is like, Zion's been kind of kept out of the media ever since the bubble ended. And he was kept out of the media before. They released this upper body pic of him looking like a Greek god, and then that turned out to be an elaborate catfish in a way. But this hiatus that we've had post bubble, no one's really seen him. No one really knows what he looks like. You may have, you may have seen him around town, but it's kind of this like, okay, you've had this time. There's been relentless talk about this. Surely you are aware of what the chatter is as well. Let's fix this. You got less than 3 weeks before, we hit training camp. And what kind of shape is he going to come into? I don't know. I hope it's good.
Yeah, I don't think Stan Van Gundy is going to be quite as lenient as Gentry. I don't know if you guys ever had a chance to talk to Gentry, but super nice guy. But I don't think he was like a real taskmaster, taskmaster.
Yeah, that's certainly the impression I think most people had. And then one hand, like it's. I feel very passionately about the fact that it's not just one man or woman. It's the whole staff. And I think that the Pelicans did have a very strong staff around, but I think there are certain things that you need in a team leader. And I think Gentry is really good at certain things and maybe not as good at others. And the things that he was good at maybe didn't translate to a team as young as the Pelicans were. And so to your point, Stan, feels like a much better fit.
Right. Yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah, cool. Well, we're going to wrap this podcast up with asking our favorite line of questions. We're going to ask you, who are your top three favorite Bulls of all time? And Michael Jordan is off the table.
Oh, Scottie Pippen is probably, I liked Scottie Pippen better than Jordan back in those days. I was talking about my biases before. I mean, I think Scottie Pippen is the reason why I have those biases of these jack of all trades, master of none type of players. And Tony Kukoc too. I think he was way, way ahead of his time. I mean, he wouldn't be able to guard anyone in today's NBA, but just this point forward, bombing threes. The Bulls had a really forward-thinking team. They had Dennis Rodman playing small ball five back in those days. And yeah, they had all these, you know, Pippen and Kukoc, just these point forwards. So I think that they took advantage of these fads that you're seeing kind of replicated in the NBA now. So it's pretty interesting. Those two guys. And then my third guy, I'm going to have to go with my guy, Cornell David. He was the original, my original Twitter handle was the Hungarian Jordan. And the reason for that is because the Bulls sold this guy, David from Hungary as the new Michael Jordan during the Tim Floyd rebuild. And this guy was going to save the Bulls. It did not end up happening. He was terrible. And I think that was a really good lesson that you don't tear down good teams to try to rebuild and fill the
hubris. You don't trade Jimmy Butler, you mean?
Right. Like, they didn't learn their lesson at all. Like, they did the exact same thing 15 years later, hired a coach from Iowa State again. And it was a huge disaster. I think that that's, yeah, like, I think the biggest downfall of franchises is the hubris of general managers. And when they think that, you know, they're more important than the players, which is, yeah, you need good players to win. Don't trade them away. Don't break up the best team of all time. Don't trade a top 12 player in Jimmy Butler. And yeah, you should be fine if you just follow those lessons and don't pin your hopes on Cornell David.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then the flip question is, who are your least favorite Bulls?
Oh, least favorite Bulls. I really did not like Tony Snell back in the day. I think he actually turned into like a kind of okay player, although when his shooting's not there, it just isn't there at all. Who else didn't I really like? I really didn't like Rip Hamilton because he was brought in as a savior. And this was during the time when analytics was starting to get popular and also get a lot of criticism. So you saw this guy just running around taking, you know, 15 seconds of the shot clock when he's 35 years old and shooting long twos. And I was just like, this is never going to work. And he was terrible. I mean, he was never healthy. He didn't play defense anymore. And yeah, he's just like an analytics nightmare. And the Bulls actually, they made a qualifying offer that year to JJ Redick. And I can't remember who, some other team stole him. But that would have been like such a huge dramatic improvement on that 2011 to 2015 Tibbs Bulls teams. I mean, they actually might have had a shot if they had Redick instead of Rip Hamilton. And I have a third name. Oh, Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade has to be on there as well. I mean, he totally robbed the Bulls of, I think they paid him like $48 million for 60 games.
So much money. Oh my God.
Yeah.
It was like what, 1 year partial guarantee for the second and just.
Yeah, they had to pay. I think he had a full guarantee. I mean, he took the second year. They had to pay him out. They had to buy him out. I think he gave back a little bit because he signed a minimum contract with the Cavs, so they got a little bit of a break there. But I mean, this guy was brought in with the premise of bringing in free agents, which I thought was like a total crock and did not end up happening. He was brought in to be a veteran mentor. Bobby Portis told him to shove it during a meeting because he was telling the players to work harder and he was sitting out of all the practices. So just like a huge hypocrite, a terrible player, was terrible in the playoffs. And he just robbed the Bulls blind, basically.
Damn, that is quite the experience that the Pelicans haven't had yet, but they've had their own mishaps, but nothing quite like bringing a homegrown player back
and only for it to fail so miserably.
Yeah, they did it the next year with Jabari Parker too. So this is a franchise.
Look, we have Jahlil Okafor, which if you want him, you can have him.
It's like just wait until we clear max cap space for Paul Millsap this offseason.
Oh my goodness.
30 maybe million more.
We can bring back Greg Monroe.
Goodness.
Well, all that stuff is in the past, guys. We're free of our bad general managers, so we can laugh about it now.
Yeah, we can laugh through the tears. Yeah. Anywho, Steph, we appreciate you coming on here. Where can the people find you quickly if you want to plug your stuff? Where are you at? How can they follow you? How can they subscribe?
Well, I'm not doing that much writing these days, but I do have this free Substack. I write maybe once a month. And then I'm doing a lot of programming projects too, which I'm tying basketball into. So all that stuff is, I just tweeted out. My Twitter account is @StephNoh. That's StephNoh. And if you want to see me in person, come down to Harrah's Casino. I'm there almost every day now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No one got to ask me twice. All right, Steph, thank you for doing this with us. Appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks, man.
All right, yeah, thank you guys so much for having me.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G, because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.